Hi, and welcome to Adland. Today we're actually talking to Social by Default, which is a podcast duo, Sarah Larsson-Bernard and Deeped Niklas Strand, who have been hosting a long-running podcast in Sweden about social media. Welcome. I'm so glad you guys could both come.
Thank you for having us.
Well, first I was going to ask Deeped about the influencers. Now that things have been happening with the quarantine and everything, there's been a lot of influencers who couldn't do their usual job, which is sort of fly around the world and pose in bikinis and look good. So I was wondering what you guys think is the future of influencers.
The future of influencers is interesting because what is happening is we probably, hopefully, won't see the death of influencers because I think they are important in marketing in some ways, but a maturity of the influence marketing furthermore, because what we have seen is many companies and brands that have used influencers without thinking about what it should be doing for them, just to everyone should have an influencer, so let's have an influencer. And then really haven't got the effect that they probably had wanted and just burned a lot of money on it. So after Corona, we hopefully see a maturity and other influencers that are able to be more professional than a lot of influencers have been. But of course, today there is many influencers that already are very, very professional. So hopefully they are still alive and we see a new breed.
Yeah, I think we've seen a new breed of more creative services from them. What do you think, Sarah?
I think that the influencer marketing had reached some sort of a peak moment during 2019. Just like Deeped said, there were a lot of companies wanting to experiment with influencers, paying overpriced money perhaps for semi great influencers to try to promote their products. And with the Corona crisis, I think the washout, or I don't really know how to explain it, but I think that just like Deeped said, it will be the ones that are really great at their job as being an influencer will remain, whilst the other ones who are more like up and coming wannabe influencers will have a really hard time to survive.
Yeah, I think you have a good point there. And considering what's been happening recently, we're going to have to touch on that too. Yesterday, almost all of Instagram went completely black because all of the people who were online were posting for Black Lives Matter, and they decided to post black squares and hashtag it Black Tuesday. I noticed that sort of backfired in a kind of way where people were saying you shouldn't be posting that because there's information in the Black Lives Matter tag that can't get out because you're all using that tag for these black squares. And I was kind of wondering if that was just, I just recognized that we were doing basically the same thing for the Arab Spring and other large movements that were globally, but I've never seen one that's moved quite as fast as this. And I heard Deeped was saying earlier, it might have actually to do with the quarantine.
Yeah, and I think very much had to do with many, many influencers. And of course, we as ordinary users, this is was something we can do, we could do that are sort of, we can do something. And it's even if the whole situation is very complex, it's, posting a black square is easy and you can feel you are part of something. And every influencer I follow was posting a black square and sort of ran as fast as they can to be a part of this because they haven't had anything to do during the corona. So I think the fast pace that Blackout Tuesday hashtag was moving was really, really interesting, and probably because of Corona.
But yeah, I think you have a point there. Sarah, I was going to ask you about another thing too, because I know you saw it as well. There was a girl named Fantasy Finnair or something like that, who's like a slash influencer journalist. who posted, or she posed for footage of her trying to help board up Santa Monica. And somebody was filming it and it clearly exposed that she was only posing for this, but she went back to her car and then drove home. So I was trying to figure out who this woman was, and I found out that she's a journalist from sort of some sort of right-wing publication, and they keep calling her an influencer that's been called out for riot posing. It just struck me that it seems that we have more people who are not influencers in the way of fashion, but influencers in the way of news now. And I was wondering if you had any points on that.
I think that a lot, I mean, usually when you think about influencers, you think about your typical lifestyle influencer or fashion influencer or food influencer or your regular blogger. But I think that if you look at the micro influencers, there are a lot of people within their profession that have become influencers just like her. She probably has a lot of followers, and she can make a stand and she can make a difference just by using her channels the way that your normal sort of influencer does. But I think that considering that we all have video cameras in our phones today, you should be much more careful, because people are more aware of influencers trying to make up content to be able to post something. And people are always there filming or wanting to give a different perspective and maybe what the context is actually showing. And this time she was probably very unlucky. She was trying to do something that apparently didn't fall out quite well.
Do you think people are more aware these days? Because I kind of feel like people fall for it easier somehow.
I think that people are more aware that we are putting on a facade as influencers. You can see a lot of influencers sort of in the wild Instagram accounts popping up where people are actually filming influencers that do stuff, and they will get their 5 minutes of fame by doing something like that. So I think that we are more aware that there is a facade, that they're trying to find content, and if we can sort of break that, we're willing to do it.
Yeah.
And I think an interesting thought around this is for sort of 8-10 years, we came out and say everyone can be a journalist because of social media. And sort of now is everyone can be an influencer because of Instagram and cameras and stuff like that. And sort of some journalists see that, well, I probably can be more successful or do more change being sort of the influencer instead of being the normal journalist. And that's sort of a change that probably we will see much more, and it will be more difficult to find the borders between what's true and what's just an opinion. And
right,
in this diverge discussion landscape, I think it's we need to see it through and be careful how we do it.
Yeah, there's more activists / journalists than objective journalists.
Than influencer journalists. It's a sort of activist journalists, I think we always have had in some ways, in some papers, but influencer journalists that are more their own brands and the brand of the paper and the journalistic ethos, it's not the same anymore.
Right.
Can it be a strive? Can it be a strive within all of us that we love the fame, and perhaps by using your channels in a influencer way, when you can build up a follower base and you can sort of strive on that moment of fame? And I don't know, it's just, I we can see more and more often, just like you say, journalists that actually try to be more of influencers than the journalists because they like to be in the center.
Yeah, no, I definitely see a breed of that going on, because I think there's a lot of younger people who grew up who are addicted to the dopamine hit of likes and reactions.
And fame is sort of from the beginning cheaper to think of the fame, the fame film where it's so you want to be famous, but fame costs, and here you start paying. But today, it's much cheaper to be famous, but it's expensive to than being famous, because it's much harder to maintain the fame. But I think that's also sort of a problem, because you can it's easier to be famous and get your 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah, especially in the days of memes, where you could be famous just for calling out some rainbows. I was just thinking, because we're talking about brands, yesterday, like after all the black squares, a lot of brands and globally followed along with black and white statements, basically. So you're basically watching all of these brands coming out with either black squares or black and white statements. And I saw a lot of that backfire as well, because some people would screen dump news reports about these brands being racist in one way or another, and then just simply ask, is this you? So they would call them out for basically just joining this movement here because it looks good right now, but they don't actually say hire people who, you know, it seems like it's people are much quicker to call out when brands are jumping on the hype train of something today. And do you think that has to do with like how everybody's on social media?
It's so easy to get information. It's also so easy to find transparency. So I think that as a brand, if you're trying to jump upon something like this, you really, really need to have it in your genes that you are safe within that space, because people again likes to they do like to sort of tear down the facade you're trying to put up.
Yeah, so you can't just paint a pretty picture. You actually have to walk the walk.
Yeah,
because it's so easy to sort of be in some color of washing. If you talk about environment and stuff and not walk the talk, you are greenwashing. Here is some sort of, I don't know,
black washing.
And I think it's very important to see that the companies that I think did it well are companies that in their culture, in their sort of DNA, are part of the black culture also. Nike, Adidas, Vans, all those. Of course, for them, it would be a sort of a total failure not to do it, but I think many companies that was running along with the meme yesterday doesn't have it, and then it just feels that no, okay, you are sort of just a part of something you don't really know what's about.
Yeah, I think the most terrible example of it was the Washington Redskins doing a black square.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody was like, I think there could be something else you might want to do.
Yeah. but I think it's important to see, because we have spoken a lot about the contextual marketing and the real-time marketing, and everyone was changing the logotype in rainbow colors and all that stuff, and sort of starting to think what's the real-time meme we can do and be true to, and that build our brand and our trustfulness as a brand for real, and not just running along with every other meme that are on.
It has to be in your legacy. It has to be aligned with all your communications the other 365 days per year. And if it is, yes, please go ahead, because people will believe you, because you've shown before that this is something you actually believe in. But if doing it just to be on the hype, it will backfire, because people will see through it and it will actually harm your brand instead of building it.
Yeah, I think this is very accurate. And like the brands that did it well, like Beats did a good one. I think that was a much better statement than I saw from, for example, Nike. I felt that one was a little self-serving.
Yeah,
it was sort of navel-gazing in its own headline, you know, oh, we can say don't do it for once, yay.
But that was some copywriter who just found the holy grail of, yes, we can do, just don't do it.
He's probably been wanting to do that for years.
Yeah, what I probably would have liked to see in all this was also companies going out and donating money to actual organizations fighting this instead of just putting up the black square, actually showing that they're doing something else besides the quick and easy things.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think I saw very many brands do that at all, actually. That's a good point.
And H&M was doing a white square. That was interesting.
Why would they do that?
Well, it worked, but it was very strange.
Who did the white square?
H&M.
Oh, wow. I don't know what that means.
Just to draw a very weird parallel, but remember the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge?
Yeah.
I mean, looking at, it's almost the same hype as that. The only difference is that the Ice Bucket Challenge actually made a difference because companies did donate money. The ones that didn't do it did get backfired as well. So it would have been nice for someone, some huge organization or some huge company to actually go out and do some real actions that supports the black movement or gender equality or something like that, and do a shout out to other companies to see that actually going in motion.
Mm. I saw somebody on Twitter say he made the point that if your organization hasn't hired black communicators or any employees, then I don't want to see you putting up a black square either, which is a really good point.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of bizarre if an all-white company puts up a Black Lives Matter thing, and it's like, why doesn't anybody work there then? Like,
yeah, or sort of making the bet, because of course you can say, put up an opinion and a value and say, we will live like this, we're starting now, and taking the bet and just saying, watch us, we will change. That's okay, but everything will be back as normal today, probably. And that's sort of the problem with real-time marketing sometimes, that it's a meme and it's sort of one-shot ID.
I did think it was quite interesting how quickly it all spread. And I think you did have a really good point that it is because the influencers didn't have anything else to do.
Yeah.
For so long, and I guess everybody's tired of corona graphs. So I saw the Swedish MP, Strandhäll, I can't remember what position she's in, but she tweeted out images of the White House in the United States, where one of them is, it's lit up in the rainbow flag, which was after the court decision, and the other one regarding gay marriage in the United States, and the other one was when it was black, which was, I can't remember exactly when that was taken, but both of these photos are from the Obama era White House. And she was saying that the black out one was now during the riots.
Okay.
So there were a lot of people responding to her, pointing out that she was wrong, because this is very easy to look up, like you say.
Mm-hmm.
And she never changed what she said, which I found pretty interesting, because you would think that at least a politician would attempt to adhere to the truth, but I guess they don't.
Well, I haven't seen it, so it's sort of, and she's not longer in the government, so she sort of probably feel a little bit freer to do things, but I think all. Seeing the risk of the fast pace and the speed that's starting all these memes, if it's Corona or if it's Black Lives Matter or whatever, and still having a cool head and look into what is it really I am retweeting. I think it's more important than ever now, because we are so we are becoming used that politicians and people that are known are retweeting and saying things that for a couple of years ago we wouldn't say even by ourselves as the ordinary users. So I think it's more and more important to be see the risk of retweeting things you don't really know from where it's coming and who is tweeting or posting things. Yeah. And I think many politicians should go back to school and learn media critique and being aware of how hard it sometimes can be to see what's real and what's fake.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. But like, you're basically saying there's a harsher climate on Twitter.
It's
or like in politics these days.
It's an harsher, but sort of people instead of trying not to be as the ordinary Twitter user, they have become more setting a bad example sometimes, and I think it's a problem. We have it in Sweden and US have it sort of and that's sad because sometimes we have a great channel, social media is great, it could be the real democratic tool we really need, but somehow it's become something else.
Could it be that you need a little bit of drama to actually stand out in the buzz because the information Maybe. Density is so high? So you need to be over dramatic, and you need to stir up feelings, and you need to put yourself out there so that people actually will react. Because if you're just your average Joe, no one will listen to you because you won't be interesting.
Yeah. And of course, because both you and me, Sarah, is working a lot with making, creating content, and we need to do better content as a brand, because it's much harder to stand out to get through the noise. And of course, when being a politician or an opinion maker, you probably have to do the same. But probably sometimes put the loudness before the rightness.
I mean, if we can do a parallel if we go back to the influencers, because there were a lot of influencers in the beginning of the corona crisis who actually tried to take advantage of the crisis to create content. They quite quickly realized that was not a good idea. But again, they tried to go the extra step to be obnoxious or to be a little bit louder than their competitors. And I think, unfortunately, and especially if we look at Twitter, the climate there is so harsh that you need to do that. Otherwise, you will just drown.
Mm. Yeah, so basically politicians are realizing now that what they're doing with their tweets is communication like advertising is, and so it's simpler to do with like images of the White House, for example, to bring home a point.
Yeah.
But you don't have a team of creatives there who are checking that they're the right images in the first place, and if that message can be heard, when you're creating an ad in an ad agency, it goes through so many checks before it's actually hit in the paper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think many politicians or sometimes organizations are hiring advertising people or people from B2C that are coming in to do something new and not understanding the special situation a politician or a political party or an NGO or something are the special context they are in, and sort of it can be good, but it's not really, it's being a part of the other, the B2C communication landscape, and I think it's a problem.
Yeah, is it harder for smaller brands to reach out on places like Twitter these days because they're not causing, you know, a scene to be seen? Maybe that's what the name should be.
I do believe it's
more
so
difficult.
I think it doesn't matter if you're a big company or a small company. I think that if you're mainstream in your content, it's harder to reach out. So you need to be louder or better or more creative. And since, just like Deepit says, it's expensive to hire great creatives. It's really hard to create good content. So the easy way is actually to stir up feelings or to go that extra, perhaps not the right way, but do something that you know will go through that noise, because then you will be seen.
And very easy to do the same as everyone else. If someone else are doing, say, the PepsiCo trial, no, but some Pepsi is doing something that is fun, okay, then everyone is doing it. If someone is starting to do real-time marketing, then everyone should do real-time marketing. But problem is, everyone is becoming a me too communication, secondary on the train. So I think smaller brands have to sort of find their own voice, even if it's hard and it might be feeling that, oh, how should I do this and I to grow fast. But those who have grown fast have always done it with their own voice and not being a duplicate of other brands.
Yeah, this is true everywhere.
And I think in social media it's even more important to do it and stay on track, sort of what you want to.
But if we also look at the development of social media, and if we look back 5-6 years, it was easier for smaller brands to be heard or seen within these channels. I think the complexity, if you take all the algorithms, the amount of people, the information density, and all that into account, then if you don't have the money or the budget to hire creatives and you know what it actually is about, it's so easy to start doing content the way that you use these social channels as a private person. And it's a huge difference using these channels as yourself or building a brand for a company. And I think that sometimes people misinterpret or they don't really understand the difference, and that means that they are doing things as a brand that could have been okay if you were a private person, but if you do it as a brand you will fail because it's not trustworthy or it's not according to how brands should talk or how companies should act in these channels.
And it's strange sort of if a brand become too much of a person.
Yeah,
because we then we get confused. Sort of, who am I talking to? Is it the person behind the brand for real, or what are you doing? And I think it's another thing I about small companies and brands. Back to influencers. It's hard to. For small brands, probably to find the same availability of influencers, because even smaller influencers are sort of have recognized their worth, or sometimes think they're worth more than they really are, and so it's harder to start building. A small brand with small influencers that then are growing and still are your friend and you can grow with them. And that's something that probably will both be problematic for brands, but also for the influencer market, because if every influencer are thinking that they are very very important and should have very much paid, there will be harder to sell them for the agencies also.
We also think influencers are kind of the... I was just thinking about, there was a bunch of women influencers who claimed to be feminists and things like that on their Instagram profiles, but then they also took money to travel to Saudi Arabia and claim that a festival there or a meeting there was the most amazing thing they have ever seen, while women in Saudi Arabia were still fighting for a lot of rights that they don't have there, which to me felt like any brand that wanted to have feminism in their name, using any of those influencers, that's an obvious cross path that doesn't work. So you really have to look at the entire history of what the influencer is doing.
Yeah, exactly. And if you are looking to the influencers that was promoting the Fire Festival, how can you sort of believe anything that they say further on? Because they obviously either are very easy to fool, or they are not caring what they are running. So I think we will see a maturity of influencers and influencer marketing further on, because it's necessary if it should be stay alive as an own marketing concept.
I have to give one thing to the Fire Festival creatives, and that was that orange square thing. Yeah. I mean, they set the gold standard of colored squares
yeah.
there.
Yeah,
it was a great social media marketing campaign.
Oh yeah,
I mean, it was built up in the best way.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
and it was so simple: yeah. A square with a color.
But,
see, that's what we're doing now. We're all doing black squares now.
But it's very funny. I don't know if you have followed the drug lord. His name, Escobar. Yeah. Have you followed these extremely strange story about the Escobar phone and the Escobar? It's a Swede, and then some sort of relative to Pablo Escobar, who is having a company that are selling the same phones. The latest is iPhone 11 Pro that they putting gold plating on and then selling to people and saying this is the Escobar phone. And they've done it with the Samsung Fold before.
So they're gold plating phones and naming it after a drug lord?
Yeah. And it's a strange sort of stunt marketing with every possible way we don't want to see. It's half naked girls that are dancing around with these phones and stuff, and people are trying to buy them and they don't get the phones, and the MKBHD have done a lot of films about it saying don't go on this scam. But they still send him things and want him to do. It's so strange. And I think looking into marketing and looking into the influence of marketing, this is sort of a very, very interesting way to see how complex it's starting to be to in the influencer and the market and the sort of go coming through the noise is today. It's very interesting. Look at MKBHD, his films about Escobar and the phones. It's very interesting.
Yeah, that is crazy. But yeah, I guess this is the extension now that we have like influencers / fake journalists, whatever they are. We used to talk about on social media ages ago that we had to be our own personal brands. Everybody was a brand. And it just seems to me that it means that you can say fewer and fewer things that are actually personally going on in your life on these social media channels. It's like, I got a kitten could be controversial to somebody because that's what it sort of feels like today.
Yeah, I think in some way, and I think we can still be personal, but not private, and we should never ever be private and in social media, probably, because that can backfire. But I think in influencer and personal branding, many of us are working with experts and finding new ways of using experts and making them better to be experts on their own. And I think that's an important thing to do for brands.
Sarah, what do you think was the most recent social media campaign that was really, really good? Apart from the black squares, because that spread pretty quick. So we got to admit that was really kind of fascinating.
Oh, I wish I had an answer to that. I believe that some of the campaigns that you see over where you are, we don't even see here. So it's really hard for us to say. I would say, though, that going back to Nike, and this is not pure fresh because I think it's 2 years ago, when, what was his name? Kaepernick was kneeling, and they actually took advantage of that. And when people were starting to burn their clothes, they were actually doing something really great of it and turning it around and telling people how to do it in the right way. And then you saw that follow-up video a year after with what was the core message? I did forget, though.
If you have to stand for something, I can't remember the line, but the line was quite good.
Yeah. And I think
that
was something that I still remember, though. And it was basically only on social, and it was huge. That and the golden egg.
Yeah, the golden egg was good. It was a good, strange campaign. But I think,
yeah, the golden egg was pretty crazy. I love that one.
But I think the sort of the problem when asking what was the best social media campaign, we are still in some way not doing social media campaigns yet. It's the sort of the same campaign. Yeah, we used to, but now it's more tactical and they're smaller and they are often very fragmented. I hope we see a sort of returning to bigger campaigns that are social media first during the autumn and such as.
Do you think that perhaps the fragmentation of social media as it is now could maybe delay that? Because I realized yesterday there was a lot of people that were angry with Facebook, for example. So tons of people went in and deleted their Instagrams because they didn't want Facebook to profit from their images there in their disagreement with Facebook, Zuckerberg leaving Trump posts up on Facebook. I don't know exactly what was going on. But so I do know a lot of people just simply left Instagram. And it seems to me that social media collections are getting more and more fragmented back to sort of bubbles, the way we used to have bubbles in blogs. You know, you had certain blogs that were on certain topics and they only talked to other blogs on the same topics. And very few blogs were like all topics. It just seems like we're all moving to more private discussions and sliding into everybody's DMs today. And I was just wondering if that's just me, or is that something you're noticing as well?
Well, it is a trend. I mean, if transparency was really hot a couple of years ago, it's more privacy now. I think, again, looking at the environment that is really, really harsh, it's safer to have your inner community and communicate one-on-one or one-to-few, because then you can be more personal. You can even be private. And I mean, we were quite private on Twitter 8-9 years ago, because we weren't as vulnerable as we are today. So I think this is some sort of a reaction to how social media have developed, that we are more safer to be in smaller communities. And to be honest, the climate in smaller communities are often a lot nicer and a lot more likable to be in than being out there.
There's still nuance when you're talking one-on-one or in smaller groups. But have you also noticed that Twitter, I don't know if you've gotten it yet, but Twitter has these features that when you tweet something new, you can choose whether everybody else can respond to it or only the people who follow you.
Yeah, I don't think I got it yet, but I saw it will be launched. And that's interesting, sort of part of it. And what sorry is also in, because we have seen Facebook are working much more with Messenger, the direct messaging in the Facebook sphere will probably soon be one. WhatsApp and Messenger and Instagram DMs will be one. And we saw today that Jack Dorsey was endorsing Signal.
Which is hilarious. That's my favorite thing.
Yeah. So of course we still have a very strong urge for the privacy issue, probably the latest development in US and of course Corona maybe have made it even stronger, but probably it's a phase. As well as other faces, and we will see what's next. I think another thing in social media to look in is that we are more to consuming content and be entertained. I think rise of TikTok is really, really something like that. Because you sit and consume funny 10 seconds TikTok videos and people are creating things for entertaining and sort of the stories and Snapchat is also much about entertaining and not about communicating. And I think that one have to see and look into and as a marketer, of course, tag into, but as users, as we are long time and some of us lovers of social media, so discuss and understand what's coming to this.
Yeah, it's social media is more turning into a place where we simply watch rather than engage. Yeah. It's not a two-way street anymore in a sense. I think this has been a really interesting conversation, and I want to direct everybody to where you guys can be found on the internet. So I know that your website is socialbydefault.se.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But please, Sarah, tell us your Twitter handle or Instagram.
It's Sana CLB. It's really hard to pronounce in English. I'm sorry.
But I know where it is, and I'm going to put it on in the article about this. And what about you, Deeped?
I'm Deeped everywhere. You are the start of that handle.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I love that story. I mean, you chose Deeped as your handle everywhere, and you had Deeped as your handle on Adland, and then you actually made it your name.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. And what else are you what else are you up to these days? Do you have anything you want to promote?
We are doing our podcast soon, probably, and we have our 14th version of our course on Berg School of Communication that is about social media and building brands in social media. So the 40th time we will run this course, and the 40th will be digital.
Yeah, that's the first one that's digital, so it's a new challenge.
That's interesting. Very cool. All right. Thank you so much for coming to Adland's podcast. Shape, shape.